Welcome to The Crimson Threat. I'm John Behrens, pastor of Restoration Messianic Fellowship in the Boulder-Longmont area of northern Colorado. Our website is crimsonthread.com. This study was recorded during our normal Tuesday evening Bible study. Enjoy the study. So last week we were in Acts chapter 23. We got all the way up to verse 23. Paul has been arrested and he got the guys that have vowed to kill him and they're waiting in ambush. And Paul's nephew gets wind of the plot and goes to the tribune, who would be the Roman official in charge of Jerusalem, or, you know, the Jerusalem district or whatever, as opposed to Felix, who we're going to meet next, who is the Roman governor of Judea. Tribune would be not a mayor, of course, because he isn't elected, but his responsibility would include Jerusalem. So anyway, Paul's nephew goes to the tribune and says, they're going to come tomorrow and they're going to ask to bring him back to the council because they want to ask him some more questions. And they've agreed to ambush your guys on the way and kill Paul. Okay, so that's sort of where we left it. The other thing to understand is the Romans, although they may have been individually pious, and they certainly had the cult of Caesar, which was basically a citizenship loyalty test, otherwise didn't much care who you worshiped. You know, you go back to the Assyrians, and when they conquered folks, everybody became whatever their religion was. It was part of the deal. You know, we conquered you, our God is stronger than your God, therefore, you're all going to worship our God now. Romans weren't like that. They were really only interested in civil peace and trade. And as long as you weren't scaring the horses or disrupting things, you could worship anybody you wanted. The Jews here are grumpy with Paul because of a misunderstanding about what he's teaching. And what we're going to see is they're going to try and bring this to a succession of Roman officials, and they're not going to get anywhere because basically the Romans don't care. And the other part of this is we're going to whip through this fairly rapidly simply because I don't have a lot to say about it. It's all pretty straightforward. So at this point now, we're in Acts 23:23. Then that's the tribune, called two of the centurions and said, get ready to 200 soldiers with 70 horsemen and 200 spearmen to go as far as Caesarea at the third hour of the night. Also provide mounts for Paul to ride and bring him safely to Felix, the governor. And he wrote a letter to this effect. So first thing is, if you are tribune and in charge of Jerusalem and all of Jerusalem is upside down and everybody's rioting, your job's in jeopardy. Certainly can be expected to put it down, but again, the Romans were perfectly capable of putting down rebellion with some efficiency and brutality, but you really don't want to do that. In other words, what you really want is a province that's peaceful and happy and pays lots of taxes. You don't want a province that you got to continually go in and root out rebellion and unrest and it's just in constant turmoil. The Romans have a vested interest in keeping things peaceful. So the tribune here, when he finds out that he's got a bunch of hotheads looking to basically ambush a party of his soldiers and take Paul and kill him, just doesn't want that. And so when he sends Paul off to the next level up, which is to say, I want this guy out of my town. I don't know what to do with him. Here, boss, he's yours. But he wants to make sure there isn't any trouble on the way. So he mounts up basically a short battalion of Roman soldiers. 40 or 50 hotheads who have taken a vow would be very foolish to mess with a battalion of Roman soldiers, and particularly so out in the open. In other words, if they ambush the Roman soldiers in the middle of Jerusalem, first off, fighting in the middle of a town is difficult. And the second part of that is you get other people who will sort of join in. Whereas if you got 50 guys trying to take on a battalion out in the field, open field somewhere, there's no contest. So what it is big enough not to be bothered and also big enough not to be tempted, is the idea with the escort here. So, 26. This is the letter he wrote. Claudius Lysias, to His Excellency the Governor Felix, greetings. This man was seized by the Jews and was about to be killed by them when I came upon him with the soldiers and rescued him. Having learned that he is a Roman citizen and desiring to know the charge for which they were accusing him, I brought him down to their council. I found out that he is being accused about questions of their law, but charged with nothing deserving death or imprisonment. And when it was disclosed to me that there would be a plot against the man, I sent him to you at once, ordering his accusers also to state before you what they have against him. This guy's trouble in town. Best for me if he wasn't in town. So you can start earning your pay, Felix, because I'm done with this guy, and ships him on up. Now, again, notice the phrasing here, and we'll see a variation on this a couple more times. I found that he was being accused about questions of their law, but charged with nothing deserving of death or imprisonment. So the fact that the Hebrews regarded Paul's offenses against the Torah, by the way, what are they regarding his offense to be? They regard him as preaching another god. And it says clearly in the Torah, if some, you know, prophet or dreamer of dreams comes to you and he tells you to come worship a god that you haven't known, you'll kill him, stone him. So from the Hebrew perspective, preaching that Yeshua is Messiah and the God of Israel is blasphemy. And according to the Torah, that's a death sentence. But notice that the Roman says, I heard all this, and as far as I can tell, there's nothing to kill him for. Here, you, ball's in your court. You deal with it, because I'm done. So again, this goes back to what I said earlier. The Romans don't particularly care about internal matters of subject people's religion. And it was generally left up to the various religions to police themselves. And when we were in the book of Romans, one of the things that the synagogue had was the ability to collect taxes, in fact, the requirement to collect taxes. They would collect taxes from members of their religion and remit that to the Romans. They also had the authority to do corporal discipline, put people in jail. So they basically had all sorts of civil authority, and the Romans were just fine with that as long as they did whatever they did with their own people and everything else on the surface was peaceful. The problem that Paul has is he's caused a riot in town, and that's not good for business. Now, Claudius Lysias has got him, doesn't want him, doesn't want him in town, and isn't going to mix in with the internal affairs of the Hebrew religion. So as I say, he kicks him upstairs. 31. So the soldiers, according to their instructions, took Paul and brought him by night to Antipatris. Now Antipatris is, for those of you who have studied your Old Testament geography, doesn't exist. It's actually Apec. And Apec is on the coastal plain, which is downslope and north of Jerusalem. And it's a choke point, and there's always a fortress there because it's where the coastal river comes in and sort of kisses the highlands. And there's a very narrow area of trafficable terrain there. So it's a choke point. You all remember the story of Eli and his two sons? Eli, remember, was the corrupt high priest, and his two sons were worse. And they went to do battle with the Philistines, and they took the Ark of the Covenant with them. The place where that battle happened was Apec. So anyway, there's a fortress there, and so they get him out of Jerusalem at night, park him in the fortress, and then the next day they're going to move him on up to Caesarea, where Felix is. 32. And on the next day they return to their barracks, letting the horsemen go on with them. In other words, the bulk of the escort went back to Jerusalem, But the cavalry went forward and carried Paul on up to Caesarea. 33. When they had come to Caesarea and delivered the letter to the governor, they presented Paul also before him. On reading the letter, he asked what province he was from, and when he learned that he was from Cilicia, he said, "I will give you a hearing when your accusers arrive." And he commanded him to be guarded in Herod's praetorium. Okay, praetorium, the word originally comes from the general's tent in a Roman encampment, was the praetorium, where the leader stays. So it then came to be basically headquarters, palace, wherever it was that the leader was living was a praetorium. In fact, later on, Caesar's personal guards were called the Praetorian Guards because they guarded Caesar, who was the leader. Chapter 24. And after 5 days, the high priest Ananias came down with some elders and spokesmen, one Tertullius. They laid before the governor their case against Paul, and when he had been summoned, Tertullius began to accuse him, saying, "Since through you we may enjoy much peace, and since by your foresight, most excellent Felix, reforms are made for this nation in every way and everywhere, we accept this with all gratitude." In other words, good on you, governor, and oh, by the way, we're not contemplating rebellion here. We are loyal subjects of Rome. 4. But to detain you no further, I beg you in your kindness to hear us briefly. For we have found this man a plague, one who stirs up riot among all the Jews throughout the world and is a ringleader of the sect of the Nazarenes. He even tried to profane the temple, but we seized him. By examining him yourself, you will be able to find out from him about everything of which we accuse him. So now the charges against Paul have been elevated. First, it was just sort of locally in Jerusalem, and hey, Tribune, this is what the problem is. Okay, now we got the governor. Hey, this guy rattles all around the Eastern Empire. Every place he goes, there's a riot. So what he's being accused of here is fomenting disorder and civil disobedience and unrest, which is something that the Romans do care about. They don't care about items of law, but if this guy is a troublemaker and causing riots all over the Eastern Empire, that they do care about. Verse 9. The Jews also joined in the charge, affirming all these things were so. And when the governor had nodded to him to speak, Paul replied, "Knowing that for many years you have been a judge over this nation, I cheerfully make my defense." So what he's saying is, hey, bub, you should have been here long enough to understand who we are. In other words, this ain't your first trip to the rodeo. You have been in Israel, you know Jews, you know us, so I feel like I can talk to you as one who understands what I'm saying. He's going to repeat this, by the way, for Herod. And I cheerfully make my defense, which is to say, hey, since you do know what's going on here, my defense will be something that is understood by you, and so I'm not worried. Verse 11, you can verify that it is not more than 12 days since I went up to worship in Jerusalem, and they did not find me disputing with anyone or stirring up a crowd, either in the temple or in the synagogue or in the city. In other words, I've been here for 12 days, and I haven't caused any trouble. 13, neither can they prove to you what they now bring up against me. But this I confess to you, that according to the way, which they call a sect, I worship the God of our fathers, believing everything laid down by the law and written in the prophets, having a hope in God, which these men themselves accept, that there will be a resurrection of both the just and the unjust. So what he's saying is, yes, I do follow the way, and I share with these guys the hope of the resurrection. 16. So I always take pains to have a clear conscience toward both God and man. Now, after several years, I came to bring alms to my nation and to present offerings. So, hey, the only reason I'm in town here is to do some charity work. Right? Now, what are you saying? In other words, I don't normally come to these parts, but I got some charity work to do, so that's why I'm here. 18. While I was doing this, they found me purified in the temple without any crowd or tumult. In other words, I was minding my own business, not drawing a crowd. Remember, he purified himself along with the other Nazarites who were getting ready to clear their vow. And he was going to come back a week later. And it was on coming back a week later that he got nabbed. So he has purified himself. He's done everything necessary to be ready to clear his Nazarite vow along with the other Nazarites who are clearing their vows. And I will suggest to you this is also at Shavuot or Pentecost. Remember, he was hurrying to get back to Jerusalem to be there for Shavuot, which tells me that he wants to get his vows cleared for Shavuot. Verse 18. While I was doing this, they found me purified in the temple without any crowd or tumult, but some Jews from Asia. They ought to be here before you and make an accusation should they have anything against me. So he says it wasn't the folks from Jerusalem, it was these guys from Asia, which, by the way, is where I had all those riots. Right? He's not saying that, but that is in fact the truth. So what he's saying is you've got some out-of-town guys who are here making trouble. I wasn't making trouble. It's these out-of-town guys that are making trouble. And again, as we said last time or the time before, I don't remember when, the reason the Jews from Asia are there is because Shavuot is a feast of ascent, and so everybody has come up from all over the Mediterranean world to be there for that. So these guys had a legitimate reason to be there. They weren't just following Paul. They were probably up there for Shavuot, recognized Paul, and said, "Aha! We ran him out of town in Asia. What's he doing here?" 20. Or else let these men themselves say what wrongdoing they found when I stood before the council. Other than this one thing, that I cried out while standing among them, it is with respect to the resurrection of the dead that I am on trial before you this day. And again, you remember when they hauled him before the council, the tribune with Roman guards, Paul recognized that the council was divided between Pharisees and Sadducees. Pharisees believing in resurrection, Sadducees not believing in resurrection. And so basically he throws a cat among the pigeons and says, well, the only reason you guys are after me is because of my hope of the resurrection. And then the Pharisees started fighting with the Sadducees and the Romans had to pull him out of there. Now, having said that, understand that this is a more substantive accusation than simply a trial tactic. It is a good trial tactic. In other words, if you can get the judges brawling among themselves, you might be able to slip out under the table, which is what happened. But he is on trial for his belief in the resurrection. Because the essence of those who follow the way are those who believe that Yeshua is raised from the dead. So when he's standing there before the council, he says, hey, the only thing you guys got against me is I believe in the resurrection from the dead. So, as I say, it's a good crowd control tactic, if you will, to get your enemies fighting among themselves, but it's also true. 22. But Felix, having a rather accurate knowledge of the way, put them off, saying, when Lysias the tribune comes down, I will decide your case. All right. So, remember, Paul led off by saying, hey, Felix, you have been governor of this place for a while. You know what is going on with the Jews. And now it says in verse 22, Felix has a rather accurate knowledge of the way. So Felix, as I say, knows what's going on. And he says that when the tribune comes down from Jerusalem, he will make his decision. 23. Then he gave orders to the centurion that he should be kept in custody, but have some liberty, and that none of his friends should be prevented from attending to his needs. In other words, he's basically under house arrest in Caesarea, but not in chains in the dungeon. 24. After some days, Felix came with his wife, Drusilla, who was Jewish, and he sent for Paul and heard him speak about faith in Messiah Yeshua. And as he reasoned about righteousness and self-control and the coming judgment, Felix was alarmed and said, "Go away for the present. When I have the opportunity, I will summon you." So what I am inferring is happening here is Felix and his wife, who is a Jew, they've got this expert in the way and expert in the Torah. And sort of for entertainment of a Sunday afternoon, they decide, let's talk to this guy. The guy's intelligent, he's learned it, he knows, and so let's go talk to him. I mean, the guy's got nothing else to do, he's in jail, right? The point is, though, as Felix starts to listen to this, my inference from this is Felix starts to get convicted. And Felix says, if I listen to this guy much more, I'm going to become a Christian, and I don't want to do that. Not a good prayer move for a Roman governor. And this is Johnnyology, okay? That's not what the scripture doesn't say. But I sort of get the feeling that that's what's going on here. 26. At the same time, he hoped that money would be given to him by Paul. So he's hoping for a bribe. So he sent for him often and conversed with him. When 2 years had elapsed, Felix was succeeded by Porcius Festus, and desiring to do the Jews a favor, Felix left Paul in prison. Strictly a political move, no reason to hold Paul, but it's politically unpopular to turn him loose. So we'll just keep him in jail. Chapter 25. I say, I'm zipping through this. If you guys want to pause and talk about something, that's fine. I'm motoring here. 25. Now, 3 days after Festus had arrived in the province, he went up to Jerusalem from Caesarea. And the chief priests and the principal men of the Jews laid out their case against Paul, and they urged him, asking as a favor against Paul that he be summoned up to Jerusalem, because they were planning to ambush and kill him on the way. So they haven't, after 2 years, given up their hope, although I suspect the original crew is probably dead of starvation by now. Verse 4, Festus replied that Paul was being kept in Caesarea and that he himself intended to go there shortly. So he said, let the men of authority among you go down with me, and if there is anything wrong about the man, let them bring charges against him. So Festus is at least clever enough that he's not going to fall for, gee, new guy who doesn't know anything. You really got to give us this Paul guy. As I say, you don't get to be Roman governor by being completely stupid. Verse 6. After he stayed among them not more than 8 or 10 days, he went down to Caesarea, and the next day he took his seat on the tribunal and ordered Paul to be brought. When he had arrived, the Jews who had come down from Jerusalem stood against him, bringing many and serious charges against him that they could not prove. Paul argued in his defense, neither against the law of the Jews, nor against the temple, nor against Caesar have I committed any offense. But Festus, wishing to do the Jews a favor, said to Paul, do you wish to go up to Jerusalem and there be tried on these charges before me? In other words, if you go to Torah, and Festus is not a Jew, but according to Torah, if you have a capital question to be decided, the perpetrator runs to the city of refuge. The elders in the city of refuge take him then back to the scene of the crime and investigate. And then based on the results of their investigation, he either then is put to death if it's murder, is taken back to the city of refuge where he must remain until the high priest dies if it's manslaughter, or is released free if it is just a freak accident. So for Festus to say, well, the scene of the crime here was Jerusalem. So are you willing now to go back to Jerusalem and I will judge your case there, which is where all the witnesses are and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Perfectly reasonable request. Paul, however, this is not his first of the trip to the rodeo either, and he knows that that isn't going to work. 10. But Paul said, I am standing before Caesar's tribunal where I ought to be tried. To the Jews I have done no wrong, as you yourself know very well. If then I am a wrongdoer and have committed anything for which I deserve to die, I do not seek to escape death. But if there is nothing to their charges against me, no one can give me up to them. I appeal to Caesar. Then Festus, when he had conferred with his council, answered, to Caesar you have appealed, To Caesar you shall go. So what Paul is basically saying, without saying it, is if we go back to Jerusalem, you ain't going to try me because they're going to kill me. And so rather than go back to Jerusalem and have that happen, let's kick it up to the third level court. Remember, it started off with the tribune. Now up at the governor. Governor isn't willing to do what's right, so fine, let's get out of the country, go back to Rome, and settle it there. Verse 13. Now when some days had passed, Agrippa, the king, and Bernice arrived at Caesarea and greeted Festus. This is Herod Agrippa. This is Herod, also known as Herod the Great. So anyway, he comes for a state visit, or again, probably on a Sunday afternoon, and greeted Festus. And as they stayed there many days, Festus laid Paul's case before the king, saying, "There is a man left prisoner by Felix. And when I was in Jerusalem, the chief priests and the elders of the Jews laid out their case against him, asking for a sentence of condemnation against him. I answered them that it was not the custom of the Romans to give up anyone before the accused met the accusers face to face, and had opportunity to make his defense concerning the charge laid against him." So they asked me, first thing when I came over and took up my position, they asked me for Paul, and I told them, I have to hear both sides before I give you Paul. I'm not just going to give him to you, and he's got to be able to face his accusers. 17. So when they came together here, I made no delay, but on the next day took my seat on the tribunal and ordered the man to be brought. When the accuser stood up, they brought no charge in his case of such evils as I supposed. In other words, I was expecting something that was worthy of the death penalty under Roman law. They did not bring anything like that up. 19. Rather, they had certain points of dispute with him about their own religion and about a certain Yeshua, who was dead, but whom Paul asserted to be alive. Being at a loss how to investigate these questions, I asked whether he wanted to go to Jerusalem and try there regarding them. But when Paul had appealed to be kept in custody for the decision of the emperor, I ordered him to be held until I could send him to Caesar. What Festus is saying is they were having problems with him with regard to their religion. I was not competent to make that decision because I don't understand their religion. So I asked him if we could go back to Jerusalem and hold the trial there, and he would still be the judge, but at least he would be able to hear all sides. Then Agrippa, Herod, said to Festus, "I would like to hear the man myself." By the way, Herod is not a Jew. He's an Edomite, an Idumean. But he is from the area. 22. Then Agrippa said to Festus, "I would like to hear the man myself." "Tomorrow," he said, "you will hear it." So on the next day, Agrippa and Bernice came with great pomp, and they entered the audience hall with the military tribunes and the prominent men of the city. At the command of Festus, Paul was brought in. And Festus said, "King Agrippa and all who are present with us, you see this man about whom the whole Jewish people petitioned me, both in Jerusalem and here, shouting that he ought not to live any longer. But I found that he had done nothing deserving death. And as he himself appealed to the emperor, I decided to go ahead and send him. But I have nothing definite to write to my lord about him. Therefore, I have brought him before you all, especially before you, King Agrippa, so that after we have examined him, I may have something to write. For it seemed to me unreasonable in sending a prisoner not to indicate the charges against him." So Paul has asked to go to Rome. Festus says, "Okay, you go to Rome. And now I've got a problem. What do I tell Caesar about why I'm sending you to Rome? I mean, is this an all expenses paid vacation across the Mediterranean, or is there some reason I'm sending you?" So what he's doing is he's bringing in Herod, who is an expert in the Jewish law. And one of the questions that he is asking Herod is, "Give me something to charge this guy with, because right now I got nothing." Chapter 26. So Agrippa said to Paul, "You have permission to speak for yourself." Then Paul stretched out his hand and made his defense. "I consider myself fortunate that it is before you, King Agrippa, I am going to make my defense today against all the accusations of the Jews, especially because you are familiar with all the customs and controversies of the Jews. Therefore, I beg you to listen to me patiently. My manner of life from my birth, spent from the beginning among my own nation and in Jerusalem, is known by all the Jews. They have known for a long time, if they are willing to testify, that according to the strictest party of our religion, I have lived as a Pharisee. And now I stand here on trial because of my hope in the promise made by God to our fathers, to which our 12 tribes hope to attain as they earnestly worship day and night. And for this hope, I am accused by Jews, O king. Why is it thought incredible by any of you that God raises the dead?" The defense that he makes before Herod is that the whole crux of this entire brouhaha is whether God raises people from the dead. And it is because I hold to that hope, which, by the way, all 12 tribes also hold to, but because I hold to that, for that reason I am on trial. That's his defense. Verse 9. "I myself was convinced that I ought to do many things in opposing the name of Yeshua of Nazareth, and I did so in Jerusalem. I not only locked up many of the saints in prison after receiving authority from the chief priests, but when they were put to death, I cast my vote against them. And I punished them often in all the synagogues and tried to make them blaspheme, and in raging fury against them, I persecuted them even to foreign cities." So again, he's saying, I used to be one of the guys who is now demanding my own life. The reason that they are demanding my life is the same reason that I was persecuting those who follow the way up until now. And not only that, I did it not only here in Jerusalem, I did it in foreign cities. 12. "In this connection, I journeyed to Damascus with the authority and commission of the chief priests. At midday, O king, I saw on the way a light from heaven, brighter than the sun, that shone around me and those who journeyed with me. And when we had all fallen to the ground, I heard a voice saying to me in the Hebrew language, 'Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? It is hard for you to kick against the goads.' And I said, 'Who are you, Lord?' And the Lord said, 'I am Yeshua, whom you are persecuting. But rise and stand upon your feet, for I have appeared to you for this purpose, to appoint you as a servant and witness to those things in which you have seen me and to those in which I will appear to you, delivering you from your people and from the Gentiles to whom I am sending you, to open their eyes so that they may turn from darkness to light and from the power of Satan to God, and that they may receive forgiveness of sins and a place among those who are sanctified by faith in me." So what he's saying here is, I used to be one of the guys that's standing before you demanding my own life. However, I received a vision from Yeshua, and that changed my perspective. 19. "Therefore, O King Agrippa, I was not disobedient to this heavenly vision, but declared first to those in Damascus, then in Jerusalem, and throughout all the region of Judea, and also to the Gentiles, that they should repent and turn to God, performing deeds in keeping with their repentance. For this reason, the Jews seized me in the temple and tried to kill me." So in other words, all I'm saying, doing is preaching repentance. And for that, I get killed, which, by the way, is pretty normal. That happened to lots of prophets in Israel. So, you know, he's in good company. 22. "To this day, I've had the help that comes from God, and so I stand here testifying both to small and great, saying nothing but what the prophets and Moses said would come to pass, that the Messiah must suffer, and that by being the first to raise from the dead, he would proclaim light both to our people and to the Gentiles." So basically he's saying is, I am standing here in accordance with the Torah and the prophets. I'm not saying anything weird. And I'm simply saying that the thing that was prophesied has now happened. And that's what's got them upset. 24. And as he was saying these things in his defense, Festus said with a loud voice, "Paul, you're out of your mind. Your great learning is driving you out of your mind." But Paul said, "I am not out of my mind, most excellent Festus, but I am speaking true and rational words. For the king knows about these things, and to him I speak boldly. For I am persuaded that none of these things has escaped his notice, for this has not been done in a corner." So what he's saying is, yeah, dumb Roman Gentile, you don't understand these things, but Agrippa does. And I'm talking to him. I'm not talking to you. And furthermore, I am very sure that Agrippa knows all these things because none of these things was done in secret. They were all done right out in the open. 27. "King Agrippa, do you believe the prophets? I know that you do believe." And Agrippa said to Paul, "In a short time, would you persuade me to be a Christian?" Paul said, "Whether short or long, I would to God that not only you, but also all who hear me this day might become such as I am, except for these chains." Then the king rose, and the governor and Bernice, and those who were sitting with them. And when they had withdrawn, they said to one another, "This man has done nothing to deserve death or imprisonment." And Agrippa said to Festus, "This man could have been set free if he had not appealed to Caesar." Well, except he couldn't, because the only thing that what appealing to Caesar did was prevented him from getting turned over to the guys in Jerusalem. Certainly, every layer of Roman justice has found him innocent. With that, the next thing is he gets set sail to Rome, and then we'll start all that. Somebody like closing prayer?